Physical threats such as severe weather, infrastructure failures, and civil unrest are increasing in severity and frequency, forcing organizations and government agencies alike to prepare for unpredictability. That's why only OnSolve technology is committed to helping security and risk professionals identify threats quickly and manage response holistically. OnSolve combines artificial intelligence, AI, powered threat detection, real-time and historical, with mass notification, incident management capabilities, and travel risk management to form the industry's most comprehensive unified platform. One that helps organizations identify critical events faster, analyze risks more accurately, and shorten the time to respond. From anticipating risks to detection and recovery, OnSolve technology and their experienced team support over 30,000 organizations across the globe through every step of a critical event. Welcome to the PreparedX podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, and welcome to episode 133 now of the PreparedX podcast. I'm your host, as always, Rob Burton. Nice to have you with us. Just before we jump in for today's interview, I want to let you know about the 9th annual International Crisis Management Conference that's coming up in the scenic Newport, Rhode Island. And that's coming up on June 5th and 6th of 2024. So we hope you can join us. It's a fun-packed few days. We have speakers on day one, a group of panelists as well on day one, and then day two, some training. So find out more at crisisconferences.com. Okay, today I'm joined by Nathan Moore. Welcome, Nathan.
Hey, thank you very much, Rob. How you doing?
I'm great. And, you know, your early years getting involved in the whole weather world as a young meteorologist, I'd love to hear about in our Q&A here. Start off in Texas, great career throughout the U.S. here. And then degrees in mass communications, which I'm fascinated about, of course, coming from our crisis preparedness world. So looking forward to hearing more about that, as well as, of course, all those roles through to where you are now at Storm Geo. So really looking forward to it. Welcome, Nathan.
Hey, thank you very much. Yeah, again, I appreciate you allowing us to kind of talk about, weather. I know weather fascinates a lot of people. And yeah, like you said, over the next, coming several minutes, we'll hit on that and, I'll give you some of my interest and then what I'm also seeing coming up in the meteorology world, kind of how it's changed as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right, let's just jump in straight. So let's talk about early life and education. So a childhood passion for weather. So I know in your bio there, it talks a little bit about going way back. So could you share your first memories or some of those early childhood memories and what sparked that fascination for you?
Yeah, if you talk to a lot of, fellow meteorologists, really a lot of them have, it's almost innate. They've almost were born with the fascination of weather. And a good percentage of my friends actually, ever since they were 4 or 5 years old, and something that I always remember, and the thing that first got me were mainly because I lived along the Gulf Coast in Southeast Texas. I was a small town called Lumberton, but just outside of Beaumont, Texas, right along the Louisiana-Texas border. We experienced hurricanes there, a lot of the time, and. Yeah. My first hurricane, I remember, because I was born in 79. The first hurricane I remember was Hurricane Bonnie, and that was in 1985 that hit Southeast Texas. And I always remember that type of storm and how it, interested me. It was a category, I think it was a borderline 1-2 hurricane. And that was really the first storm, I think, that really piqued my interest into weather. So at that time I was about 5 years old, and I was always a very social, extroverted type of person, and one thing I've always wanted to do was television weather. So something I did as a youngster was I would in my room, because I was the only child, so I had to kind of make up plan, all right, I'd have to be creative, because I didn't have a brother or sister, right, anything like that. Yep. And so something I would do is I would put a map on a wall And I would have a newspaper next to me as well. And I would, you know, read the weather off of that newspaper and then pretend, and I would have a camera, you know, a camera wow. that my dad had.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I'd put it right in front, and I'd had a yellow map, you know, like a Rand McNally or whatever,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, and,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and just point out the weather that was going on. And then I would do, you know, live reports from my front porch, and, you know, all these clouds are rolling across, and, you know, something, you know, my mom always would tell stories is, you know, I would say, hey, these clouds are coming. Sure enough, they're rolling right across the camera screen and stuff. So, you know, I've always been interested in it, and weather has just, you know, been a part of me, and, you know, I love it. And I mean, you know, it's not a, you know, $1 million type of job or whatever, you know, but, you know, so you've got to put your, you know, you've got to be passionate about it. And that's something I definitely have put into is a lot of passion. And yeah, that's really where it all started. I mean, I'd say really, again, Hurricane Bonnie and probably the mid 80s really started it. And then, you know, we'd always get afternoon thunderstorms, sea breeze, things like that would occur. And so, yeah. And not until, you know, which we'll get into later on, when I got into the Midwest was when winter weather kind of, you know, factored into things here as well.
Yeah, well, that's great. You know, thanks for sharing that, those early memories. That's, you know, I really love those stories. How, you know, look, we have the passion for the jobs that we do, and often our early memories and our early childhood is, you know, shapes that path. It certainly did for me as well. So let's talk about your educational path, moving on slightly. So mass communications and geosciences, how did they help, you know, those two, you know, subjects come together and help you kind of shape where you are today?
Yeah. So I always wanted to do, you know, I've always wanted to do meteorology. And I always wanted to do it, you know, in front of the camera. You know, I that's something I've actually wanted to do, you know, again, since I told you since I was young, you know? So what I, ended up doing was I was only 30 minutes away from Lamar University, which is there in Beaumont, Texas. I was only about 30 minutes away from there, and they had a really good mass communications program. Well, I didn't know quite which route to go, where I wanted to go in terms of meteorology, because there were several schools, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Mississippi State, Florida State, you know, you had Penn State, you know, a lot of these other schools that are meteorology focused. I just didn't know which route I wanted to go on. So what I ended up doing is I got to my junior year of college at Lamar. And my parents and I decided to go take a little tour across, you know, across to different schools. We were going to go to Mississippi State first, then to Norman, to University of Oklahoma, then down to College Station, and then make our way back home. And so we wanted to kind of figure out what route to take. And I was like, you know, I was like, I could utilize what I'm learning at Lamar, because they had a television studio, you know, I actually did weather for them during that time. And I mean, it was, you know, if you saw it now, I mean, you definitely know it's VHS and, you know, like just ridiculous looking or whatever, but it was good practice. And I interned at TV stations then as well at one of the CBS affiliate there in Beaumont. I interned there doing weather also off and on. But what I then did is we took a trip to Mississippi State. My mom, dad, and I did. We visited their climate lab and all that other stuff. And I still remember that to this day. We were sitting in the cafeteria there. And, you know, mom and dad asked, they go, what do you think? And I said, you know, I think I just want to go here, Mississippi State. And they said, well, we haven't gone to the other two places. I said, I know. I was like, this is where I want to go. This is what I'm looking for. So, so, you know, long story short there, I ended up picking Mississippi State. We ended up just coming right back home. I had two options though. I had either option of going after my junior year to Mississippi State and getting my geoscience degree, or I could go an extra year, get my you know, finish out my mass communications degree and then go 2 years to Mississippi State and get my master's in geosciences or meteorology. And I figured, I mean, I can just go an extra year and, you know, and I'll get two degrees. And that's what I did. And that's the route that I took. And really what I used in both of those has helped me, you know, communicate, you know, help me in TV. And even honestly, when I went to the other markets, which we'll get into, you know, I know later on, is, you know, it helped me do television reporting and things like that as well. So it was a blessing in disguise, to be honest, for me to do what I did and then where it took me after that.
Yeah, well, you packed a lot in there in that short period of time. So that's fantastic. Well, we're going to move straight on to your job experience here. You went to Iowa first in terms of, you know, your first job in meteorology. And what were the challenges there? What were the learnings from that initial job getting, you know, thrown into the fire, so to speak, after being at school for so many years?
You know, a great question there. And I tell you, the big thing that really helped me with that, first of all, you know, a lot of these smaller television markets, like your, you know, Sioux City, Iowa's, you know, your, I mean, you know, you got all these small markets everywhere, you know, that are very small. A lot of the meteorologists who work weekends, they have to do reporting during the week, news reporting. So it doesn't matter what it is. You know, they try to focus more on environmental type of stories, but sometimes because of a short staff and so on, sometimes you're doing shootings and fires and, you know, potential, you know, murders and things like that, you know? So, you know, but Sioux City, what you had to do is you actually had to shoot your own video. You had to come back to the station, look at the video that you got, write it, put it into the computer, and then you had to edit it as well before having it to the newscast.
Right.
You know, a lot of these markets, like the Houston's, New York's, Chicago's,
they have a
LA,
whole team of, you know, a whole resource, right? Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And so these smaller ones, you don't. So you know, you had to do everything. And, you know, sometimes you wouldn't get back. You had a 5 o'clock newscast. You'd get back to the station at 4:15. And really, to this day, I don't know how sometimes I got the story across me. It probably wasn't the best ones in the world, but it was, you know, it was probably poorly edited and everything else. But, you know, you had to do that. And so that was a learning experience.
Yeah.
From a weather perspective, which is interesting. The first year I was in Sioux City was 2004. And actually, you know, cause I was like, oh man, yeah, I get to experience a good winter, good snow and so on.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, as I moved up there and in Texas, they actually got snow before we did up in Sioux City.
Of course. Yeah. You can't make that up, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that, you know, so that was, I always remember that it was like, I think one of the latest on record that they got snow. I think it was like New Year's Eve, I think, is when they ended up getting it. But I also remember the time that I was in Sioux City in terms of a forecasting challenge. It was on a Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon, it was 80 degrees. A cold front moved through late Tuesday, and Thursday morning, it was 8 degrees for a low. And so, you know, I always remember how challenging that was because I was like, that's a 72 degree change, a swing there from, you know, Tuesday to Thursday morning.
Yeah.
And, you know, that really, you know, sparked in my mind the extremes that you can see up there in the Midwest. And, you know, it still amazes me, like how the interstates a lot of times are a dividing line between, you know, heavy snow or nothing. And
right. Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and that whole sort of thing. So, you know, in Sioux City, that's what, you know, for my first job, that's what really, I learned a lot through that by doing a lot of stuff on your own and then being able to move forward with, I mean, you know, with the weather and how challenging it actually was up there.
Yeah, I've been across the, you know, I've been fortunate enough through my job to visit across, you know, various parts of the U.S. And, you know, I've been to parts of the U.S. where I would, you know, bet, you know, a lot of money, and I'm not a gambler, that there would be snow here. And, you know, it's 60 degrees. And yeah. I'm just like, I need to move there. And this weather pattern is very similar. I think it's, I had a colleague that worked there and a client there. Indiana, it was the bottom of the state there by the Mississippi River. I'm forgetting. I don't know why I'm forgetting on the name. Evansville, Indiana. And they had this nice, you know, I mean, of course, you know, recently they got some ice and some snow, and they were shocked. You know, everybody was like, you know, the place is falling apart. But that's fascinating that we have these different weather patterns. But I do want to move on. I want to go from Omaha to Houston, because again, you've got this, you know, unique perspective in terms of where you've been in the career and, you know, transitioning roles. I'm interested in hearing about that, but also how it's evolved over the years and those skills that have been most critical at various different stages.
After Sioux City, I ended up going to Omaha, Nebraska, where I also was weekend weather, weekday reporting is what I did. So I essentially did the same thing, just about 90 miles south of where I originally was, up in Sioux City. So I did that, and then when I realized, long story short, also I did a 3-year contract there, but about 2.5 years in, I got an offer for, now I'm with, as you know, Storm Geo. I'm with them now. They were Impact Weather back then. So I wanted to get back to the Texas area, and I was about, like I said, 6 months short of ending my contract in Omaha. But what I ended up doing was I said, I was like, if I have this opportunity, I'm going to take it, because, a lot of times you can't break a contract in the TV market, but it's usually when it's with another TV station.
Right. A competitor. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Exactly. No matter where it's at, usually, it is like that. So what I decided to do was I decided to come, I got a job offer at Impact Weather in Houston. And I did start off with marine meteorology there, which I never knew existed. I didn't know any of that. But through great training and so on, I ended up taking that route with Impact Weather. And I was there for, I think, like 3 years. I think I was with them. Again, I wanted to get closer to home. It was a good opportunity. Private weather, which, I didn't know how it existed necessarily, or how vast it was, or, whatever. And so I took that route. And then after that, I kind of went on to, other things. But that's what I ended up. That's why I went that route, because I knew I wasn't going to move up, where I was there, in Omaha. So I figured this is an opportunity, both financially and also both professionally.
Yep.
I could grow further and put another feather in my hat, since I've already done the broadcast. Now I can work into something else,
right?
Into the sea, basically, is what I did after that.
Yeah, that's great. Great transition there. I know you mentioned that this is your second stint now at Storm Geo. So, I'd love to kind of hear a little bit about, that initial Impact Weather and then transitioning again over to Storm Geo, and how the industry may have, changed, especially where you sit right now, and the challenges that Storm Geo face today.
Yeah. I know something also, I did get out of, weather, for a couple of years. I wanted to try it just to see what it would do, because I really wanted to do something more client centric. I didn't necessarily want to stay behind a computer screen, do forecasting. I mean, I loved it, but I wanted to do something different. And I always wanted to try, sales or something like that, to where I can talk, I can discuss it, I can do that whole sort of thing. So that's why I got into client relations with Universal Weather and Aviation. At the time, they owned Impact Weather. That was kind of, so it was an easy transition for me. So I went into client relations, and what I ended up doing was I went into, I figured that was my opportunity. Then I was asked to come to do aviation forecasting for Universal Weather and Aviation. So when I did that, I was like, man, I've never done that before. I want to try it. I want to see, how this does. So really, I was there for a long, long time, and I didn't know how vital, honestly, aviation weather was. And I've seen it grow over the last 5 to 10 years. And I think overall, I've seen the private weather industry grow as well. Like, broadcast used to be the end all be all sort of thing, from what I remember and what I gathered, back 15, 20 years ago. But now I think it's shifted more to a private weather industry, because how people need it so much more. There's so much, there's so much technology that you can, that you can get off of this, than anything. And I think, off the phones, it's not as reliable as people think it is. And that's really, honestly, one thing I tell people is because it changes all the time. That's why, to me, it's not as reliable as, like, companies, seriously, like Storm Geo's, the other company I was with for aviation weather, and so on, because It's a more personalized, it's a more precise, location specific type of forecasting. And now with, you know, the climate changing and so on and so forth, that is, there are more extremes. I also think part of that has to do also with technology. We have more cameras around, more cameras available and things like that. So it is reported more, but you know, you do see it. And again, it's one of those things where, you know, in that case, I think it's more, like us as humans, you know, we evolve. Well, that's what weather doing. It's evolving, and the technology is evolving as well. You know, now with AI and stuff like that, that's the big challenge now is, you know, how do companies incorporate that with AI? You don't want AI taking that over, because really a lot of people still like the personal touch. People. That's what they like. They don't want to talk to a computer. They don't want to talk to any of that. And that's the one thing I think that's a big challenge, though, is now, you know, people relying on this almost too much. I'm guilty, you know, but the personal aspect of it is what I think is most important. And that's the one thing that I know that Storm Geo has a big upper hand in, is the personal touch, because we still have a lot of people doing these things.
Right.
But that's also, you know, a challenge that we face other people down the road is the ones who are all stuck in technology, in that don't look outside that box there.
Yep. So you got to have that perspective, right? Of both. So that's great. So aviation, that's fascinating, in the private aviation world. So how did you tailor weather forecasting and reporting for aviation clients differently from the marine domain? So of course, you know, weather patterns come, and it seems to me in a non-experienced weather, individual who relies, like you said, on the local, media reports, but also I go to these, radars now that you can get on your phone, and it's, you know, the local radar. And again, even that sometimes is wrong, right? And we live in Newport, Rhode Island, the sailing capital of the world, I guess it's called, in the summer. And of course, you've got all these professional sailors here. So we got access to some great data here for weather patterns, because they need them to win races. So there's some local tools and resources out there that are actually much more accurate than the general ones that you can pull off of line. So I'd love to hear the difference between the two, though, and your experience there.
Yeah, like I tell you, aviation weather was an animal I have never thought about doing, never even crossed my mind, none of that. And, you know, when that opportunity came to me, I said, well, I was like, okay, I was like, I've already done sea, you know, I've done land, now what the heck, let's just do air, you know. So
why not? Cover them all, right? Yeah.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, like, I was in that, and I learned a lot through that. I mean, I didn't know anything about icing at the time. I didn't know, I mean, you know, like, I knew about turbulence. I just didn't know how it worked, what the processes were. I didn't know how much, I mean, like, fog impacts everybody, but I mean, I really realized then at the time how much it impacted flights and stuff, you know, like, I mean, you know, folks flying into London during the winter. I mean, you know, you go, well, you know, why couldn't you pick the summer to do that? You know, because it's almost, you know, almost constantly foggy there, you know, during that time. But, you know, that was, I think, the most fascinating thing was first of all, how many private jets are out there? That's the thing that really, really surprised me was that. And then also next was how many, like, how much the forecast entailed into it. Because, you know, as a company, as a forecaster, you would write a forecast for that, a TAF, which, you know, we call it, it's basically, you know, if a lot of people looked at it, they'd be like, what does this even mean? You know, it's because you always have your winds, you have your visibilities, and then you have your cloud cover, like a broken deck or an overcast deck or a scattered or few or whatever. You know, so you had different levels of it. So basically, you know, just as a company, what we would do is we would forecast their departure location. Let's say they, you know, departed Boston, let's just say, and a alternate forecast. And it'd have to be within these certain criteria. If not, then we'd have to take that out, you know, take the alternate out, and then add another one that's good. Then we would, you know, because we had a flight planning team, and what they did, they would give them a route that looked good, that you know, that they thought was reasonable, because they got numbers and stuff like that to work with as well. Best flight, you know, least amount of gas that's used, fuel, etc.
Right. Yep.
So then we would forecast that along the route, make sure we don't fly them through any major turbulence. Some clients were more sensitive than other clients. We called them white knucklers, because they were, you know, they
holding
were
on for dear life. Yeah.
any little bump. Yeah. And then we would give them a forecast for their destination and an alternate for that. If their alternate wasn't good, we'd let the flight planner know, and they would have to put that into their flight plan to, you know, say, hey, this location wasn't good. We're giving you another location that's better.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the process that went along there of how and what we took, you know, throughout, you know, as I worked there, you know, throughout the many years. So, you know, and again, some are more sensitive than others. Others say, you know, just fly me there. Actually, we participated in the world's longest flight. It was one of our clients, and they went from Singapore to Tucson, Arizona.
Wow.
And so leading up that entire week, we were trying to plan where the upper level winds were the best and make sure they had enough fuel. And sure enough, we did it, and they were able to break the world. I cannot remember how many miles it was, but it was, I mean, clearly, you know, you think about Singapore all the way to Tucson, Arizona. I mean,
yeah,
we crossed everything there.
Yeah.
And so we participated in that, and, you know, and they made it with, you know, I think like an hour's worth of fuel, or maybe 2 hours worth of fuel left, something like that. So, I mean, and that also factors in as well with, you know, the best winds and things like that. So, it was a big time learning experience, something I never knew I would do, honestly. And something that's part of that expansive, you know, weather network that's really growing out there, throughout.
Yeah. So I, you know, you touched on it a little bit in terms of technology. I'd love to kind of just, you know, hear your thoughts on this and where you've seen technology obviously come from. You were talking about analog, and obviously we've moved into the digital age now. What about forecasting and the services that Storm Geo provide? What's the technology? Where is it going?
It is definitely going, you know, it's a continually and evolving, you know, situation. Basically, you have, you know, like, we have a very good, like, database of information, you know, very, very large, very expansive. You know, if you even want to go to hurricanes that, you know, let's say, you know, I know many people remember Hurricane Harvey or Hurricane Laura that hit, you know, Louisiana. You know, you got Hurricane Ike, Katrina,
Sandy.
Sandy. Yeah. Exactly. You go back to that, and it is in our database, and that's something you can look at, you know, in the past about, you know, hey, where do they have this at that time? How accurate were they up to that time? That's one thing. But the other thing is, you have so many different layers and backgrounds. Like, you have GIS, you know, that's really big. You have certain layers of that. I'm not totally familiar with that, but I know you just have a lot of companies that use certain layers.
That's
so you have to incorporate our technology into that. And, you know, we are coming out with new, you know, new things that that are out there. You know, we have something that's called GridEyes, which is something that is GRIDEYES. It's really for a lot of the California area, where we're pushing a thing where it's people come up with these, you know, it's a satellite image that comes up and actually shows where the vegetation is around a lot of the you know, power lines and stuff. So, you know, because a lot of times that is what creates some of these fires, is the vegetation that's close to these power lines, it sparks, and then you have fire. So that's something that, you know, we're working on. We do have like a thing called 7 Analytics, which is a big time flood model, and it takes into account topography, you know, the buildings in the area, you know, even as simple as concrete versus, you know, having you know, grounds, you know, things like that. That's something that we have that we're really beginning to push into the market. So those are really big things that we're, you know, going to. The big challenge again is incorporating it, because, you know, one company may have a certain amount of technology that matches or fits, where it may not jive with yours, but you have to kind of bring it together the best way possible to make it work. And so I think that, you know, that's always a big challenge. One thing that we do have is that we do partner with these other, you know, companies as well, but a lot of it is, you know, in-house. It's very, very centralized. You know, it's very localized, I should say. And we just have a lot of a database to get this information in and allow our meteorologists to use it. And then we use that for, you know, for our forecast, you know, because a lot of times weather is, you know, it is historical, you know, and, you know, these weather patterns, they happen over and over and over again. That's why a lot of times you'll hear analog years where it compares to this year versus this year. Well, that's, you know, that's something that's also incorporated as well. You know, that's why a lot of these hurricane numbers are predicted like they are, because they kind of compare to past years and stuff. And, you know, and also one thing that Storm Geo does have is a lot of good people who have been in this business for so long, you know, 30, 40 years, that they know how these weather patterns are working and know what they look like. And, you know, that's big time, you know, beneficial, because a lot of times you learn through these processes and learn through, you know, what this pattern looks like versus this one, you know, and they have plenty of that where they look. And I mean, they're really, really, really good at what they do. And like I said, we are, our meteorological team is excellent. And that's the big challenge is having it instantly to your thing, which, you know, we want that done, but we want it done accurately as well. And that's the big thing is trying to get that accurately portrayed to them. And that's something I think we do extremely well.
Great. That's great. Great insight. I was just in California talking about the flooding there, just this recent storm that happened last week. And I was in Malibu, and I lived in California many years ago. I go backwards and forwards still for business and personal reasons. And I can tell you, I'd not seen anything like it. And I'm used to a lot of rain here on the in the Northeast. I'm used to a lot of rain coming from England. So I've seen rain, and I can tell you, I'd never seen as much rain in 4 days in any one place elsewhere in the world. So it's a torrential downpour for literally 3.5 days, and we had a short break for a few hours, and then it came again. It was a lot of rain.
Well, you know, you said it too. I know we have some friends who live in Southern California.
Yeah, that's where it was. Yeah,
Whittier, I think, is where they're at. Whittier, California, and our friend's dad, he was exiting his driveway, and just as he was about to exit his driveway, mudslide came right down. I mean, literally, like right in front of him. And like, we got video of it and everything there too, and it was right in front of them and passed them up. You know, luckily, honestly, if he would have gone 3 feet further, you know, down the driveway, I mean, he would have been swept along with it, you know.
I read somewhere 470 something reported mudslides during that.
Yes.
Unbelievable. So I do want to, well, I guess leaning straight in here to sustainability and the climate change discussion in terms of your role and how to address, you know, these types of challenges. How are you doing that with the work you're doing there at Storm Geo?
Well, you know, I just came into this industry manager position, actually just the beginning of the new year. And one thing I've learned already since the year that I've, you know, been there is, you know, how Storm Geo is trying to branch out, you know, like I just mentioned, like things like Grid Eyes, Seven Analytics, you know, that old sort of thing. There's another company called Climatempo is the name of them. They're located down in South America. We've now partnered with them because they have a big part of that South American market that they, you know, that we have, you know, done as well, because, you know, they have a big hold on that. And they're kind of like the Weather Channel of the South, and or, you know, of South America, honestly. I mean, like they do it, except they're, you know, they don't hype it as much like they do, but anyway. I guess, you know, with all the climate change stuff that is happening, that's why we're doing all these things, because there are more, you know, there are more wildfires out there. There is, you know, a little bit more extreme of, you know, flooding, potential, you know, things like that. That's why, as a company, we're trying to embrace more of that. And, you know, whether a person believes it or not, you know, it's out there, it's relevant, it's legit, you know, other than that, you know, we're just trying to embrace it and bring that all in to one, you know, one thing, you know, one ball is what we're trying to do. And that's really something that we're trying to, you know, incorporate as a company. that I've since I've been here that short month.
Right. All right. Wonderful. All right. So I want to start to wrap up here because I was fascinated. This is my favorite part of the questions that I have for you. This is the last question, and it's storm chasing. So I know that was in your bio. I kind of honed in on that. I said, should I ask this question first? Should I leave it? I said, no. I want to get folks geared up for this one, and I'm going to tell them to listen in and wait to the last question here. So obviously you've got a background in this. You've chased a few storms over the years. Would love to hear one or two stories if you've got a couple of minutes about that experience.
Yeah,
and now you're married with a young child, and congratulations, by the way, with the birth of the baby. So, but now you're going down that path. No more storm chasing for you.
No, exactly. No more storm chasing. Wife was like, so I was like, oh, come on, maybe I can bring the kid with me. I know this is the thing they always call in the news industry kind of the kicker, because it's the very last story of the whole thing, and kind of the more lighthearted one. And so this, let me tell you, my friend and I actually, who lives in New Orleans here, his name's Hank Allen. He lives here in New Orleans. He's a TV meteorologist for the ABC station here. And him and I've been good friends since Mississippi State. And then we worked together in Sioux City, Iowa. Well, he moved to New Orleans, and then when I was in Houston. So a couple of times he would drive to Houston. Then we would rent a car, usually with good insurance, and make sure that we would take that then we drive north. Well, eventually what we would do then is we then decide to fly up to Dallas, and then we would we would pick a random week. We don't know what the weather would be like or whatever, we would just pick a random week. And so we did this for I want to say 6-7 straight years. We would do this, and we went as far north as Nebraska. And there's always an area that we would end up in, which I'll get to that in a little bit. But our story that I guess, there's two stories that I always remember that I always remember. One was in Oklahoma. We were, there was a severe weather day, and we were just outside the Oklahoma City area. And I always specifically remember this, that we literally stopped. And we looked around us completely, and I bet you we saw 4 or 5 wall clouds, wall clouds, for those of you who may not know, is like kind of the early developments of a tornado. And you could see.
You're surrounded by them.
Yeah. And I have never seen that. And I was even, Hank and I were even saying, I was like, we're not seeing things. I mean, like, these are actual wall clouds that we're seeing. Right. And, right. He's like, yeah, he goes, that's what we're seeing, So, I mean, that was one story, but the two that I always remember was we were in, I think, Kingfisher, Oklahoma. And we had, we were going along the highway, and what we had back then was we didn't have our phones or everything. We had a laptop. We had a radar that was Baron radar services, and it was kind of like it's almost like an XM type of thing, but you would hook it up to your computer.
Yep.
And you would have the radar in there. Now it would get data, from the satellite up above you, and it would bring in that information. Well, I remember we were going down the highway, and the radar wasn't, I was like, things haven't moved in forever. I was like, why, what's going on here? And so as we went across, we looked and I was like, wait a second. And there's a little thing in the upper right hand corner of the screen, and it's a red dot. That means it's not getting information. And I was like, oh no. And like, we were debating on keeping on going or not. And I was like, let's stop. Well, we looked at these homes just on our right side. I saw these big, big things in the yard. And I was like, what? I was like, that can't be hail. And sure enough, it was palm of the hand type of hail. If we would have kept on going, we probably would have ran into that storm
and crushed the car.
Just crushed the car. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, that was one of the stories that was, that was like our big time, like, whoa, actually I'm kind of glad that we both noticed that,
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that's probably some distance away that you're seeing this at, right? So, yeah. Yeah, good exactly. situation, good situational awareness, as they say. So that's great.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And you know, but the biggest one was we were in West Texas, and you know how like yeah, I mean, a lot of people you know probably may not be aware of it, but it's very barren, dusty, that old sort of thing out in West Texas. So we were out there. I think it was actually kind of northwest Texas, you know, that area just south of the Panhandle there. But we were out there, and there was one storm out there, and we were crossing the highway, and you look ahead and it's like dust. It's like complete like dust, and the storm is to our right, and the wind is just howling into the storm because the storm, what it's doing, it's sucking up all this, you know, all this wind and things like, you know, all this dust and things like that. Well, we went, I decided to record it on my phone. I gave it to my friend there, and I was like, you know, take it. And he's like, oh, you know, so we started recording it. And as we're going, you could not see anything. It was dust. And I was like, this may be the tornado. This may be, you literally lost complete, like, you lost complete, like, focus of it all.
Right.
You could not see where you were going. You couldn't see any of that, you know, and finally it probably lasted because there was a car that was pulled over to our right in the shoulder, and there was a, you know, and we kept on going straight, and we could not see anything. There were a few expletives that may have been said in there too. I couldn't see anything, but man, you made it out. And talk about the biggest sigh of relief getting out of there. And, you know, we look to our right, and I mean, there's a storm, you know, I don't know if I ever dropped a tornado, but man, it was close. And that was one of our big memories of that was that, you know, just how close it was to that. And really, again, you know, just the least expected as well.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, thanks for sharing those stories with us. We appreciate that. And thank you for your time today. This was really good. This is going to be very popular with everyone, and we'll share it far and wide. But before we jump off, how can folks get a hold of you if they want to touch base? I know I found you on LinkedIn, so we'll drop that link in there. I know your team's mentioned a Facebook page. We'll put that in there. But how else can they get a hold of you? And any final words?
My LinkedIn. Also, I do have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com, and it's / it's Moores Meteorology, MOORES, and then meteorology. Yep. That's something that I let a lot of people know of weather, especially across the South. But, you know, I do sometimes put some blurbs in there across, you know, other parts of the country and things like that, especially during tropical season. They can do that. And then also I do have Twitter, which is, or X now, as it's called, @Nathan_weather, is where you can find that too. And, final thoughts are, again, the weather industry is evolving. It's evolving out of television, I think, and really going more privately.
Yep.
And I think we're going to see a lot more of that coming up. Something that a lot of these companies probably going to run into against is the challenge of technology and keeping a good balance with that to where it's still accurate and dependable. And that's something that I'm seeing it go towards as well.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate your time again today, Nathan, and stay safe out there, even though you're not chasing storms anymore.
Hey, no problem. Hey, thanks for having me. And if you need anything else down the road, feel free to let me know.
I will do. Thank you. Well, that wraps up episode 133 of our podcast. Thanks for joining us. And don't forget, ICMC 2024 is coming up in June of this year. Check out crisisconferences.com for more information on that. Have a safe day now. Thank you.